You're listening to Kent Biz Connect, the show that connects businesses in Kent to do business. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you very much for tuning in to the bi-weekly Kent Biz Connect radio show with myself, Martin White, and my co-host.
And me, Brian Wakefield.
Brian, great to be back in the studio. It soon comes around, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, every 2 weeks, and feels like it was only yesterday when we were here before.
Absolutely. And we've got, as always, two fabulous guests in the studio with us today. So why don't you introduce yourselves to my right?
Yeah, good afternoon. Hugh O'Neill from Recognition Express. We do branded promotional products.
Hugh, welcome to the studio.
Excellent. And on my left
is the infamous Ben Leach from BOIT Solutions.
The infamous
and he
Ben
is
Leach
as well.
From
he is
BLIT well. Solutions. Ben, welcome to the studio. You're not, it's not your first time in the spotlight, as it were, but thanks for coming along. Fantastic to see you both. What we normally like to do is start the show with some Kentish business news, which we'll crack on with in a minute. If you'd like to tweet us, you certainly can. We're on Kent_biz, and we will do our utmost to give you a shout out on the radio today. But Brian, what's kind of caught your eye in the news this week?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, really. Obviously, last time there was stacks of stuff going on. I guess that's what news is. And some weeks it's not as busy or as positive, perhaps. So we've had the Thomas Cook situation, of course, since last time we were here. And how does that affect people and businesses in Kent? As Ben said, yeah, there's plenty of branches in Kent. So, you know, our thoughts are with all of those people, and we wish them well in seeking alternative employment.
I used to get my travel currency from my local Thomas Cook in Ramsgate High Street, and they were brilliant for years. I always went there because I always had one of the best rates.
Yeah.
And I won't be able to do that anymore.
Price matches and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, that's the sort of effect it has. So is it going to push that kind of thing online? Or do you go somewhere else, somewhere with less competitive rates? But we were just talking just now with Hugh. There was something came up this morning that there was a picture on social media of a plane full of people coming back from their holiday. And, yes, it was a Thomas Cook staff in all their liveried uniform and everything else. And it was, yeah, you're not seeing things. It actually is Thomas Cook people bringing you back. But they weren't being paid. They were doing it voluntarily. They just felt that they ought to do that.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is people clubbing together in these kind of situations, as Hugh said, they actually had a whip round on board. So, you know, if it was a bigger, more 400 or 500 on board, they could have had it off big time and end up with more wages than they ordinarily would have got. But joking aside, that's a nice thing to do, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, so, amazing, isn't it?
You know, that's
on both sides. I mean, the public, obviously, you know, accepting that it's really nothing to do with the frontline staff. They're just a victim of circumstance and obviously wanting to help them. But at the same time, the staff being 100% committed to what they do in terms of their day-to-day jobs and wanting to make sure that they can repatriate people as kind of smoothly as possible.
Indeed.
And doing that, you know, off their own backs, as you say.
Yeah, so, and feeling some kind of responsibility, even though they're not responsible for it, because we've heard stories of staff getting berated, you know, the holiday reps and people at the airport and, you know, getting launched into by people. That's born out of frustration and panic. But, of course, it's they can't do anything about it.
No.
They know as much about it as everybody else.
There's also been some good stories as well from the resorts as well, where reps have actually stayed on right to the death until all their customers have gone home.
Oh, really?
They're really trying to help them. There were some stories about that as well, so fair play to them.
Yeah, excellent. Well, let's show must go on.
Wish all of those people all the best in terms of finding alternative employment, but I suspect this story's got some way to run. They're now talking about accounting irregularities and,
oh really,
you know, all the skeletons are starting to kind of come out the closet in terms of, you know, how the business was managed or not and everything else. So I suspect there's a lot of news still to come here. So
yeah, there'll be elements of truth in some of that. I don't doubt just how large the elements really. And of course, with things, people always do well or profit out of situations like this. And I guess the upside is that when it all gets sorted out, a lot of those people will get reemployed, and other firms, other businesses will do well because people will book travel with them, whereas they may not have done before.
Yeah. So, well, unfortunately, that's creating an artificial spike in terms of demand in the marketplace.
Exactly, so that.
People are getting, you know, ripped off when they're having to kind of rebook flights and stuff like that, because they're having to pay through the nose to kind of get where they need to be on a certain date. So, yeah. But all that will settle down, hopefully. But it's very unfortunate at the moment, I think, the whole situation. But what else have you got for us? What else is going on? Did you want to talk about wine today?
Ah, yeah. There's the Chapel Down situation, isn't there?
Yes. Well, I don't know if situation is the right.
I had to say something to infill whilst I move chairs.
Yes.
Because I need to move across.
Being light of foot, I'm very impressed with how you did that, Brian.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, didn't get taken out at all. It's back to my football days, that is. Chapel Down, that's an infamous wine company here in Kent, of course, has released its half year financial report. They're based in Tenterden. The year-on-year combined sales have soared by 21%.
That's incredible, isn't it? I think any business would be happy with that, wouldn't they, as a kind of headline sales figure? But they've tempered it slightly, haven't they?
Absolutely.
As true journalists do, they've tempered that good news with some maybe not quite so good news. But what is that?
Well, that's the thing, and I was going to ask you about it, Martin, who's not only your wine expert and expert on all things alcohol, but
I think we should get Rowena Horton in to talk about wine specifically, but carry on.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, could have had her here today. Yeah, maybe we'll send Ben and Hugh home, and might be a bit late for that. They're doing really well. But no, I wanted to ask you about that because, yeah, their record kind of year, really. Their sales are up, profits up, etc. However, it's lost just over £500,000 over the same period last year. As you touched on there, whilst it's quite a good story, the media are kind of putting it across that what's going on here is that the turnover's gone up and they've lost that kind of money. A lot of it, I think, is it not down to investment?
Yeah, I think reading between the lines, they've clearly got a Chapel Down, and that includes the Curious Brewery that they've opened recently in Ashford. I think they clearly have a sort of medium to long term business strategy, which is based around the business getting to a critical mass in terms of the volume of product and the type of product it's able to kind of to put out in the marketplace. And I guess they're in a very fortunate position to have investors who are kind of looking at the business for the medium and long term, for whom, you know, what is it, £1.7 million worth of
losses? I think the brewery was £1.7 million.
Yeah.
And that's about a quarter of their sales, basically, of their turnover.
So their investors are obviously, quite happy with that in terms of the master plan, and obviously continue to support and back the business on the basis that, within the next kind of 5 years or so, I guess all of that investment will be paid for, and those costs kind of written off through the P&L, and the business will ultimately become profitable. So I think it's really exciting to see. And it's not just Chapel Down. I mean, there's all sorts of wineries now that exist in Kent, in fact, I was at the East Kent ploughing match last week, and there was a
taking part or watching?
No, just watching. and again, we were, I was a guest of Furley Page last Wednesday afternoon, and we were drinking local produce there as well. So, whether it be apple juice or rosé wine or sparkling wine, I think there's a kind of a plethora now of kind of Kent businesses who are in that space, who are continuing to invest in their business in that space. And I think it bodes really well for the future. I mean, it's quite interesting, having just come back from France, that the French think we are obsessed with what they call bubbles.
I think they may have a point.
When we drink our, when we consume wine, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's Prosecco or, you know, sparkling white wine. And I guess Chapel Down is a good example of that. You know, I guess we just simply have the climate and the terroir, as the French would call it, you know, the kind of the ground, the chalky soil that kind of lends itself to producing certain types of wine. And I think, you know, that business is clearly, you know, the potential for that business is clearly starting to take off, and Chapel Down have recognised that. They've got a medium to long-term business strategy in place. They're investing, they're creating jobs. You know, long may it continue. And I think, you know, the fact that they've made a, you know, what for most businesses would be quite a significant loss in the last year is clearly, I would assume, all part of their kind of medium to long term strategy.
Well, I believe that was also part of their investment. They've developed or planted another 150 odd acres of new vineyards,
right,
on the North Downs, close to Kit's Coty. So, you know, that's not no small amount.
No,
to kind of carry
so it's great
through,
to see, isn't it? I mean, that's what
literally
a lovely
sowing seeds for the future.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I mean, obviously the one caveat to all of that is you've still got to have the weather, you know, to create the sugar in the grape. You know, you need a certain amount of sunshine, and you certainly need a certain amount of rainfall. You know, what you need ideally is the kind of the ideal scenario for both to get the maximum yield out of your grapes. So let's keep our fingers crossed for nice warm summers and reasonably cold winters, and a fair amount of rain as well.
I think we're going to get that, aren't we? I think we've got a year's worth this week, and there certainly did yesterday. But what about you two guys, I guess? Will you be investing in Chapel Down and Curious Fury in your own way?
Are you consumers?
Well, I do like wine, but I probably won't be.
No, I'm more of a beer man myself.
Are you? Okay. A real ale man rather than lager. Are you
terrible,
like lager?
I'm with you all the way here.
Well, yeah. I do like lager.
Well, Curious Brew is right up your street then.
Give me a bottle of Corona and a gin and tonic any day.
Yeah. So I think in many ways that's a good news story that's been kind of had its usual journalistic spin on it, to kind of turn it on its head and actually report on a fairly negative financial figure, which is, as I'm quite
Let's
certain,
cause some more panic if we can.
Yeah, I'm sure it's quite certain, you know, it's part of their business strategy. They know what they're doing, and they're investing for the long term. So long may it continue.
Yeah, it looks good for me. The only other thing really is, I know we say every show that we're trying not to mention it, but I'm not even going to say that now because we kind of have to. So Brexit is drawing ever closer. We're a little over 4 weeks away. Or are we? I'm still kind of meeting people that are going, no, I don't think it's going to happen. I'm thinking, crumbs, we're cutting it a bit fine then. So we seem a little bit split on that. So the Department for International Trade are holding a meeting actually in Maidstone on the 7th, which is just next Monday, sponsored by, or co-hosted, I should say, by Crow at their Riverside Place offices. So they're going to be looking at preparing businesses for Brexit, basically. So changes to regulations and contracts, where to find tariff information, what do you do about business travel, personal data. They're covering all kinds of things on that. So they are getting ready for it, 4 weeks away. So what's the kind of local take? I mean, Hugh, how will Brexit, whichever way it's going to go, is it going to affect you? How do you see it?
I think the issues we have is, well, first of all, is distribution. We have factories, and we use in the Far East and mainly China. We also have in print factories in Europe that we use as well. And it's really how they're going to be affected in terms of getting stuff through customs, particularly the our European partners. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the companies that we do use have now set up in the UK. So, and they've moved more to the UK in preparation for this.
Since the Brexit thing kind of started, basically.
Yeah, so they're ready. You know, so we're ready. The other issue we have is the currency and how the currency is affected, particularly the dollar. Most promotional products start in the Far East, such as the pens. Even if they're printed in the UK, they start in the terms of being manufactured. They're manufactured in the Far East, and obviously we trade in the dollar. So. That's going to affect our pricing probably eventually. At the moment, everyone's holding off in terms of putting prices increases in, but obviously that can't last forever.
So everything's going to be a lot cheaper, is it?
Well, I think you'll find it'll be a lot more expensive in the time rise. But I think it's just the uncertainty, really, and that's what's affecting the currency as well. Hopefully when things settle down and we know what's happening, then obviously hopefully the currency then will, you know, we'll get a better rate for our pound and things will be better.
Sure. And what about you, Ben? On the kind of IT computer side, I guess you've got bits and bobs made in China and things, have you?
Yeah, the initial cost of laptops will increase, as well as computers and components, because most of the parts come from China and America, so it's all done in dollar rates. So we can see things like hard drives, memory upgrades, components being increased by quite a bit.
Oh, really? Yeah. So you obviously can't put a figure on that because nobody can. But
well, that's what makes that kind of seminar a bit of a, you know, in many ways a bit of a nonsense, doesn't
yeah,
it?
I mean, always expect the unexpected. Really,
I mean, nobody knows what this Brexit is even going to look like at the moment. So how can you? And you know, the government is spending a fortune, as they always do, through the Central Office of Information on advertising. You know, prepare your business for Brexit at the moment. But the reality is, you know, businesses don't know what Brexit looks like, and so it's a sort of chicken and egg, isn't it?
Very much so. Yeah.
I mean, what Hugh's just spoken about, and Ben as well. You know. If people think that, you know, small businesses that essentially, by and large, you know, do their business within a local catchment aren't going to be infected by all of this, then, you know, think again, because, you know, clearly you don't manufacture the stuff that you brand for people. Ben, you don't make computers. So, you know, all of that product has to come into the UK from overseas, and therefore it will be subject to fluctuations in exchange rates, and you know, so everybody's going to be affected. You know, don't think that the small business community is a sort of you know, is insulated from that in any way, shape or form. So you know, so everybody needs to know what it's going to look like ultimately, and we just have no. I don't think we. You know, what's worrying is we don't seem to have any faith in the democratic process to get us to that point at the moment either.
We haven't got any faith in anything or anybody at the moment.
It's a shambles,
isn't it?
And
some would say, and unsurprisingly, you know, when you've just got the new Prime Minister basically being taken to court and proved unlawful and stuff, it's not good coming from the top, is
no.
it, really?
And again, you know, I mean, just being on holiday in France, you know, they are, you know, people abroad are finding it all quite staggering, you know, that we're even in this situation and that there doesn't seem to be any certainty about the way forward. You know, they're all sort of, they want to know what's going on, you know.
Cause, so do we.
Yeah, exactly. so, yeah, I do feel for all businesses, because it will ultimately affect everybody who are, you know, obviously trying to put a brave face on things. And but what can you do? You know, you carry on, I guess, in the short term, Hugh and Ben, and you know, you have faith that ultimately it will all be resolved in the way that it needs to be.
I'm not sure it's going to be resolved by the 31st of October.
No.
I don't see how it can be. I really don't. You know, we've spent however long it's been, 2.5 years or something, achieving nothing from what I can see. Correct me if I'm wrong.
But it's just,
and how are they then going to achieve everything in 4 weeks? Yeah. Don't see it.
But what's disappointing, I think, you know, on a kind of political landscape point of view is, you know, it's a power game. You know, this whole nonsense of, Theresa May's deal kind of being rejected and put forward and rejected and, you know, the Labour stance on all of this, you know, it's a power struggle. You know, ultimately, you know, the party that isn't in power wants to be in power, and the party that's on the periphery wants to kind of wants to make inroads in terms of its power base. And you know, that's it seems to have kind of degenerated into that rather than, you know, what's right for
the
country.
What's right for the country and the people.
And actually the will of the people, because let's not forget there was a referendum, and regardless of what your opinion on that was, you know, there was a referendum. And so where does that leave, you know, the process on that level? That, you know, there's so many things that are so wrong with all of this.
I don't know how you're going to resolve it as well when the government hasn't got a majority.
Exactly.
So I don't know how it can be resolved.
It really has polarised opinion, hasn't it? So, but anyway, moving away from that, there was another potentially good news story, wasn't there, about investment?
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? You know, out of the ashes and all the Brexit talk. And did I see somewhere that somebody has pledged, I guess that's what it is, to spend £25 billion? It's like Austin Powers, isn't it? £25 billion on the roads.
Yes. Yeah.
So, has anybody heard that?
I've heard it.
Have
you?
Yeah.
What kind of period?
I can't find it in the news now. Funny enough, I've just been on the BBC.
So I didn't. I may have imagined it. I don't know.
You haven't imagined it.
No, Ben says he's seen it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know what period of time that's over, or, you know, is it over the next 200 years? I don't know. Is it over 5 years? Where is it going to be?
Well, it'd be nice if they sorted out the M20, with the permanent roadworks that we now have on there.
And also absolutely. The M2 as well, because it gets to a point between Medway and Sittingbourne that you're at by 5 o'clock in the evening, you're clogged up and it takes 40 minutes to get to Sittingbourne.
What, on the M2?
Yeah.
Is it really? What, every night?
Yeah. Because it's a two-lane motorway.
I'll tell you where it's come from. Obviously, it's the Tory party conference, isn't it, at the moment? Which will be in, is it Blackpool?
I think it usually is.
Or is it Brighton?
Ooh. No, that's the other lot.
Oh,
that's
is it? Okay, yeah, so Blackpool. So they have committed at their conference this week to £50 billion worth of total new spending that includes an announcement later of £25 billion for England's roads, as was £5 billion for ultra fast broadband in some of the UK's hardest to reach parts. Sounds like a Heineken advert, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know,
refreshing the parts other beers cannot reach.
That's the main problem with my industry, that is, at the moment, the broadband, especially in the people who live in remote areas like little villages like Doddington near Sittingbourne, remote areas of Faversham and that, where they only get broadband of about 2 meg at the most.
What's their mobile signal like? Is that non-existent as well?
Don't live there then.
Yeah, I mean, I often find that my 4G signal is far better than my high-speed broadband connection anyway. And in fact, if I'm trying to do stuff at a certain time in my home office during the day, despite the fact, in theory, I've got this, you know, super fast broadband that I pay a super huge premium for, the thing still seems to grind to a halt, and I often revert to, you know, my 4G network to get stuff done.
And is that, like with Gillingham, we're still running off a 50-year-old copper cable exchange. It's fibre to the box.
Yes.
From the box to your home, it's still the 50-year-old copper cable, and that's what most towns are suffering from.
Yes.
You're only as strong as your weakest link, aren't you, really?
So we haven't pieced together the last bit of the jigsaw to connect it to houses. Interesting.
Yeah, isn't it, Jess?
But I think £25 billion, I mean, you know, again, is this just a headline number that they're throwing out there to kind of get people at the conference excited, or is it actually going to translate into...
Well, it's got me excited.
Something tangible.
Apart from, I just thinking, that sounds like a lot of roadworks, but I won't say that because that's what we've got here at the moment, isn't it? But it does sound like a lot of money for the roads, $25 billion. You're trying to visualise. I mean, if they all do it at night, I suppose... You're all got paying more. I don't
know how much is the Lower Thames Crossing going to cost? Just to put that number into perspective. Lot, 10 billion at least.
Okay.
So,
yeah, it's needed very quickly.
Yeah. So, actually, you know, how much. How much is that? So, we wait with bated breath, Mr. Chancellor.
Yeah, don't we?
And, we're all for it, but, you know, get it out there sooner rather than later,
I think. Yeah, let's have some detail. I like detail. Yes. We like detail, Ben, don't we? That's what we like.
I mean, the project within, the problem with most of these projects as well is, you know, who wants a new motorway in their back garden? You know, I mean, that's what we're talking about. We need to build new roads, don't we?
Well, we did touch on this on the last show, didn't we? And a lot of it is great, but of course it's no pain, no gain, the disruption that comes when we're talking about Paramount Park and all of that. I can remember when Blue Water was built, and it's brilliant, but the A2M2 hasn't changed. And it was kind of dug up for, I don't know, 18 months, much like the M20 is now, as Hugh said. And it's painful to get there, isn't it? And in December, don't go, which is when everyone wants to go there, of course. And I just think try and avoid it. It's just
so
painful.
I mean, surely the only viable long-term solution is to take vehicles off the road.
Yes.
So surely instead of spending 25 billion quid on roads, they should be spending 25 billion quid on subsidies for employers to actually enable remote working for their employees. Wouldn't that be a better long-term...
Better rail fares. You could take people off the road by giving better rail fares. Because it's crazy, you can actually fly to places like Manchester cheaper than you can actually get in a train, which I just don't understand that.
And also make, do like the Americans do and have the yellow buses for the old schools. That take a lot of the old school traffic. It's mostly the school traffic that causes most of the
chaos around schools with
those two
mums dropping their kids off, or you know, dads, whatever.
It's bad, the yellow school buses, like America does, and we'd have a lot less traffic than that.
I think that's a good point as well, isn't it? It's I think it's just horrendous. You add that to it as well. And, I just don't even want to think, really, about all these great things that are going to happen and just the chaos and carnage that will ensue whilst we get there. And then, of course, they get there and they decide to... That all finishes in 5 or 6 years' time, and they will then decide to pot another lane on the M2 or something, won't they, or whatever they're going to do. And then it all kind of happens again.
Well, let's wait and see what happens, but, Brian, I think that kind of wraps up.
That's enough of us, isn't it?
Well, it is. Ranting on and you know, as we do. None of us are standing for election, by the way.
We should, but we won't.
No, we wouldn't want to be in that space, that's for sure. That's a thankless task. So I think what we'll do now, if we can, is play a little bit of music. Guess the link, by way of an introduction to our first guest. And we will see you on the other side of this.
Oh, yes.
Find the words, my love, to tell you how I feel, my love. Mere words could not explain. Precious love, you held my life within. taught me how to live again. Only
a blast from the past.
You sound like Alan Freeman.
I was putting on my finest DJ voice there.
Pop pickers.
We could almost be at midnight. Tuned in.
You're starting to worry me now.
Channel Radio. You're listening on a Friday night. Brian.
Martin.
Enlighten us.
I tell you what, now you're talking. I think I was in second or third year at secondary school. That was the stylistics.
Oh.
And that's almost before you were born, Whitey. That was, we reckon that's probably 73.
Gosh.
Something like that.
Yes.
73, yeah, I was 13.
And what's the connection, more importantly?
Well, that was... You make me feel brand new. So the brand is the kind of link over to our wonderful guest, which is Hugh O'Neill from Recognition Express. That you're going to say, what does he do then? Well, he does some brand stuff. So there's your link. There's your link.
Hugh,
so,
in your own words.
Yes.
We've set it up for you. Tell us what you do in a kind of a branding context.
Okay. We are a one-stop shop for clothing, which we can embroider or print, through to promotional products, pens, mugs, USBs. Probably the most unusual request we've had is for branded toilet paper.
Ooh.
Oh.
And self-assembly bird boxes is another one.
Self-assembly bird boxes.
So those are probably two of the most unusual requests we have.
Yes.
We also do, we're very big, probably the biggest, one of the biggest players in name badges.
Right.
Most of the schools in Kent have name badges, and most of them are produced by Recognition right. Express. And in fact, that's how Recognition Express started. We're a franchise business, and it started off in 1979 when a world famous hamburger company came right. to the UK, which was McDonald's.
Yeah.
Ah, in Woolwich.
In Woolwich.
Yeah.
And they opened their first branch in Woolwich. They came over, they went to Sketchley's and asked them about uniforms. And they said they wanted name badges. It's something they did in the States they didn't do in the UK.
Right.
And as a result of that, Recognition Express was born. And the franchise owner who does those badges does them to this day. So he's been doing them since 1979.
What a brilliant story.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I like that. Assumed it was launched on the back of someone listening to the Stylistics yeah, yeah. and thinking, hang on a minute, that's a great idea for a business. So it was McDonald's.
Yes, yeah,
so
that's where the business started off. Wow. Obviously, I wasn't around in 1979 in terms of being in the business. I was in the catering industry at that time, but I bought my franchise 10 years ago. We're coming up for our 10th anniversary in April. Myself and we have another colleague, Steve Randerson, over in Kent that operates down in this territory. Mm-hmm. So, both of us do quite a lot of name badges.
Yeah, name right. Well, let's backtrack on the conversation because you can't just flush this one away. Yeah. Tell us. Tell us about the branded toilet paper.
Right, okay. It was actually a friend, and he runs a company, and basically his job is he takes pirates off the internet in terms of music.
Right.
And he's not very popular because people want free music.
Right.
Even though the artist isn't getting paid for it, and his job is to take people off. So
he shuts down pirate music sites.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. That's right. And what he wanted to do was because he was unpopular,
right.
He used to wanted to send them toilet roll with his company logo on, so that people could get their own back on him.
Oh.
That when they
really,
yeah,
gosh,
yeah, I can see where this is going. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I appreciate the sentiment.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, I thought it was a good, actually, quite a good.
So that can be done,
and it can be done.
Right,
and I'll be honest with you, we didn't actually do it, and it's only because of the volumes that were required.
Right,
small volumes.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But he, but yes, it was a request.
Yes,
and it was something we could do.
Wow,
because we invest heavily in a trade search engine, which means that most promotional products we can find out there
right.
if people what people are looking for,
even if it's slightly unusual.
Even like, if it's slightly unusual, and to be honest with you, even the self-assembly bird boxes.
Yeah, tell us about those.
It was a building company.
Mm-hmm.
They came to me and just said, "We want to. We're going to an exhibition.
Mm.
It fits in quite nice with their branding." Mm-hmm. So they wanted to give these out at an exhibition. So obviously, you build them, and whatever, and. As I say, we found a supply for them.
Okay. So they wanted to... Okay, so they're a construction firm and they thought it'd be nice to give somebody a sort of takeaway kit that they can self-assemble.
And I think this is... I mean, nice. you've got to be clever with promotional products and the way you use them.
Yes.
First of all, really, you've got to have a mindset that it's an investment and not a cost.
Mm-hmm.
You then got to really think about... who you're trying to target,
mm-hmm.
and what's the need, you know, what your objective is,
mm-hmm.
And the promotional product really needs to reflect, you know, your brand,
mm-hmm.
and be linked,
mm-hmm.
and that's what the best way of getting your promotional, you know, your message out there and getting your name in front of people, and making sure it stays there.
Because I mean, we all love a free pen, and you know, we all love walking around an expo and collecting kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know about you, but in my sort of drawer in my office at home, I've got the most enormous drawer full of other people's promotional pens.
Pens, yeah.
But they don't sit on my desk, or you know, I've actually got one. one favourite pen that I use from a friend of ours, actually, Brian, called Bradley's Accountants.
Okay, Alan,
that,
yeah.
Yeah, Alan McCappin, and that does sit on my desk because it just happens to be a very, just a nice pen that I like to write with. But by and large,
and,
it goes into the drawer and forgotten about, and that's what you're talking about,
yeah,
I guess.
And it's, it was interesting. I read a story a couple of years ago, and it's sunk in, and I tell the story quite regularly. Yeah. On this story on LinkedIn was about this salesman that had been to see a customer or potential client about a very large contract. And when they'd finished the conversations about the contract, and he said, "Oh, and before I go, I must leave you with our company merchandise." Mm. And he left him a cheap plastic pen.
Mm.
And, you know, he never actually went ahead with that contract. Mm. He thought, if because that really represents your branding,
gosh,
I'm really, you know, I'm not sure that you are the right company.
He probably
for me.
Would have done it until he left him the pen.
Honestly. Mm. He went onto LinkedIn and told everybody.
Yeah.
He said, this is the value he gives to me.
Steer clear.
You know, this is the value. This is how he rates me. Mm. And he's given me a cheap plastic pen.
It's so similar.
I was going to say something about that, actually, because, again, on the pens, we've got hundreds and hundreds of them, and you get your favourite pens. A lot of it is about quality. I think, again, you just shouldn't look at price on stuff like this. It's, you know, obviously you've got to work out how many clients you've got and how many you want to really give away. But, again, even at exhibitions now, they're not attended in the same way that they were 10 or 15 years ago. You don't get the footfall. Sorry. And, basically, I can have a pen that I've used for, you know, 5 minutes, and then it starts going blotchy and it won't write. It's patchy. I run out of patience. I'm getting old. Patience isn't growing on me. You throw it in the bin and you get the next one, and one that's reliable all the time. You're going to use all
stick
the time. You're gonna stick with it. So that's a big thing as I see it. So pens for you, I think is
I mean it's still a popular product that we do, but what I advise people, if they're going to an exhibition and they are actually exhibiting, is to actually have two lots of pens. You know, you have pens because if you're, you know, you've obviously got to be aware of the cost
for the collectors.
You just give loads of pens out,
and one for the clients.
And it's just not just pens; it's all the promotional products you do. You need to really be thinking about what you're giving away.
Good point.
So, what I'm hearing here, Hugh, is that there needs to be. There needs to be a proper brief, and the brief that you encourage your clients to start with is, you know, what am I trying to achieve?
Exactly.
What do I want a branded piece of merchandise / promotional item to actually do for my business?
Yeah, exactly. And because there's different ways of using it as well, isn't it? Of course, there's the exhibitions. Of course, there's going around seeing customers. But also, you know, you've got to look at things like mail shots as well. I mean, they're a great one as well. No disrespect to the traditional printers who print paper, but leaflets don't always sort of stay in people's, you know, people will read them, and if you haven't really captured them quickly, they'll put them in the bin. Mm. If you send them a desk product that sits on their desk, it's useful, like a pad or a coaster or something that they, you know, will keep on their desk, then it's going to keep your branding in front of them.
Yes.
Mm. And so it's about really thinking about what you're trying to achieve. And
so it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, something more expensive, like a self-assembly kind of bird box. A coaster could work.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
But you need to give it some thought and...
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you have I'm interested in this, because, I mean, do you have a sort of a briefing template that you ask your clients to kind of complete in the first instance that gives you a steer for what they're looking for?
I mean, to be honest with the way I work is, because we're a small business, I try and actually sit in front of people, to be honest with you. So we're not...
Have a conversation.
You know, there's lots of other companies out there that you can talk to, a call center or salespeople, telesalespeople. But no, we're more about trying to get, if we are doing our own marketing, we try and get appointments and get in front of people.
Yeah.
And then just really, it's all about listening. Everyone says, you know, about we need to listen more. And that's really, you really got to get to the bottom of it and just ask the right questions, really. Yeah. To find out what they're doing, if it's an exhibition they're doing or if it's a mail mail shot, or they just fancy having some promotional products. It's just finding out exactly what it is they want and what they want to achieve and how they want. I mean, there's some great stories out there, isn't there, about how people try and get in, you know, with your dream customer and what you can send them to really, really get a reaction. And the more personal the promotional product is, the more likely you are to get a return on it.
Right. So, like any good marketing, you know, the foundation of any good marketing is know your customer.
Yeah, exactly.
And the more you know about them, the more you can actually create something that actually really does add value. And
I mean, I did one. I wanted to get into a particular school in Tunbridge. It was a private school. And what I did was I did him an individual mug. I found out a little bit about him. I found out that he was a really big Manchester United fan.
Right.
And he was Welsh. And so I, you know, had to put all that, you know, to the side. And so what I did was...
Sent him a branded sheep.
So what I did was I did him a personal mug with a Manchester United shirt on it. And on the front of the shirt, I put his school as the sponsors. And then on the back of it, I did in Welsh, which I obviously had to get someone to translate, maybe Google Translate, but I did the Welsh national anthem on the back of the mug.
Oh, right.
And I just took that, you know, sent them. Of course, you get a response because it's
very personal.
You know, and it had his name on the bottom as well. So, it's, you know, so the more personal you can make it, the better, really. If you want to get in with certain individuals.
So I guess if you're talking to people about exhibitions, conferences, events, they probably either don't really know what they want to do, excuse me, or they don't want to do the same as what everybody else does, which is maybe pens and that. So you can perhaps give them some ideas.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of things out there, you know what I mean, that on in terms of promotional products, and so there's lots of things. So if you're talking particularly about exhibitions, don't give away pens because everyone else is, because everyone does the same thing, don't they? And I, you know, you've already actually touched on it, that what happens is someone goes around, you go around with the conference bag, you collect all the promotional products and the leaflets and everything like that, and everyone does exactly the same. They go home and they tip it out onto the table. All the leaflets go in the bin, and the promotional products, you know, you say, oh, yeah, I'll have that, you know, and you'll collect them, and the pens go in the drawer, and the mints, you know, you start.
My wife normally snaffles it all away. She says, I'll take that. Do you want that?
I never understand why people give away bottles of water at these conferences. Sometimes they stand there, give away branded bottles of water because, you know, they drink the water
and throw it away.
Then the brandy goes, goes away into the dustbin. So, you know, you've really got to give it some thought. If you want to get a return, you've got to give it some thought.
Gosh.
So you're both sitting there in your branded shirts, actually. Yes. Ben, I'm sure you'll be going to Hugh very soon for some new ones, that's quite retro, isn't it?
Not that it's washed out or anything, Ben. You look great, mate. But Hugh, what about, you know, when it comes to, I mean, I was just thinking about your Welsh person and kind of, you know, what might kind of float his boat. I mean, the Welsh love nothing more than beating the English at rugby.
So, at anything.
So can you organise hospitality tickets to events and things, or is that strictly for someone else? Or?
I think that would be for somebody else. Okay,
we're talking very much about branded, printed kind of items and merchandise. Yeah, yeah.
And we do that. And we do a lot of clothing as well. And it's interesting because we were talking about the economy earlier and the way it goes. The last time I started, I took my franchise on in 2008 or 2009. And the recession was just starting.
I'll say that's an interesting year to do something.
What was really interesting about it was that where we grew quickest was the clothing market, where people do hold back when times are hard. They do hold back a little bit on their budgets for promotional products, but the clothing they'll always stick with because people still need uniforms.
Right.
Yeah.
And the other thing that was really interesting about it is if it was anything to do with children. So in terms of the schools that we do work with and sports clubs, where the parents would hold back on themselves, they wouldn't hold back necessarily supplying their children with tracksuits and t-shirts and sweatshirts and hoodies.
Of course, because the schools all have their own branded stuff, don't they? I guess
uniform.
Uniform was known in my day. I was thinking sports kits. But uniform.
So no one would give up, you know, spending on their children, but they, you know, they would give up spending on themselves. And so the clothing, we have seen a shift as we've come out of recession. We have seen a shift far more to the more the promotional products rather than the clothing side of stuff. But the clothing's still, you know, big enough.
Clothing is in many ways recession proof, then, I guess, in that respect. So that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. Because, as I say, we're thinking, you know, pens and, you know, rulers, I think.
Yeah, I think the other thing also is,
is there anything we're missing?
Well, the biggest thing at the moment is really the environmental products. Because that's a big thing for all companies to you know, to reduce their carbon footprint and help anything they can to do with the environment. So
coffee mug, those plastic coffee reusable
mugs.
Yes. Waitrose used to do a free coffee, and they would give you the paper, but it actually is lined with plastic, which is why it wasn't recyclable. They used to give you a...
Now you buy one for...
Now you have to bring your own in to get your free coffee. And everywhere I go now, I get given one of these
collapsible.
They're not collapsible. Well, I mean, but the ones I've got aren't. But they are these reusable coffee refill... You know,
well, the coffee refill ones were, and even if they're not plastic, they're reducing, even if they are plastic, they are reducing the amount of, obviously, the throwaway.
Because they're reusable.
Well, they're reusable. Yeah. And it's the same with water. The water bottles, we're selling lots and lots of water bottles to businesses, where in the past it was sports clubs and schools. Now a lot of businesses are buying plastic water bottles from us because, you know, they don't want the disposable cups, which people just chuck away. And the other one is things is shoppers as well. Cotton shoppers is probably our biggest thing we're selling at the moment, because again, it's obviously reduced.
Oh, the bags. The other one. Bag for life kind of thing.
So that's really, so that's probably what's the biggest thing in our market at the moment is anything that basically has an impact, a positive impact on the environment.
We tried that at my golf club. This will make you laugh. We decided to replace paper face and hand towels with cotton ones that we would wash and reuse, you know, like a reusable nappy, I guess, you know, something like that. And what ended up happening was all the members, they were so desirable that they all got...
All nicked them.
Half-inched.
Took them home.
People took them home with them, or they put them on their golf bag or whatever they did with them. So we had to bring back, you know, the old-fashioned paper towel sort of thing, you know, because stuff was going missing. It's amazing, isn't it? But I find it fascinating how... you know, one person's mug is another person's pen, is another person's notepad. Because I went to an expo this year, and it was a firm of solicitors, and part of their goodie bag was a bookmark. And I remember listening to someone else, listening in on their conversation, and they'd had this bookmark given to them as part of their goodie bag from this very established sort of firm of solicitors. And they were sort of talking it down. You know, so who'd give a bookmark, you know, out at a branded bookmark? And I'm thinking, well, I read books, and actually, a bookmark is something that I'm probably going to see every day when I've got quiet, quality time, when I open my book at night time before I go to bed. So actually, I thought it was quite a powerful, albeit very old-fashioned kind of thing
to give
out. But
it's also got a good branding area as well. You've got to think about some of the promotional products or how much branding area you've got, and it's got a nice bit of branding area, bookmarks.
Well, even when you're not using it and it's sitting around on a table somewhere, you should have the bit sticking out the top with the branding on it, shouldn't you? So it's kind of 24/7.
And also you're thinking about we talked about, you know, about mugs earlier, and you look at mugs as well. How many times do people have tea and coffee a day? You know, I mean, most people having three or four.
I've got one,
you know,
sitting on my. I don't know where it came from, but Shell have left their energy mug on my table. Yeah,
but we're sitting here in the office here. You've got three different mugs with three lots of brandy.
Yes,
on.
And coasters. No doubt.
Yes.
Dave Burton from QBH came in with some coasters, which he left.
And you can get, going back to the environmental, you get the ones that are made out of recycled tyres as well.
Yes.
So, you know, you can help the environment with that one.
I guess, like anything, some businesses really get it and see the value of it, and others just don't.
Well, it's back to what I said at the beginning, which is who sees it as a cost and who sees it as an investment.
Yeah. The example I can think of is that the mugs at the networking breakfast at BBN meetings, which we all go to here, and I like a mug. Don't particularly like the cups and saucers. So at the Dartford Group, for instance, we've had mugs there for years and years, and they're the Blue Rocket accounting mugs. And Ray and Miguel are always saying to me, do you need any more mugs? Do you need any more mugs? And they pay for them, get them, supply them, bring them in. But again, you see,
going back to what Hugh was saying earlier, those mugs are often filthy inside. They don't get washed properly, necessarily.
Well, that's not Blue Rocket's fault.
No, but the perception of that is I'm drinking out of a dirty mug sometimes.
Okay.
You know, because they haven't been to the dishwasher cycle properly or whatever it is. Mm. So that, again, is a negative.
Yeah.
So, yes, a positive, but also at the same time, if it's not presented properly, it can also be a negative. And the classic one for me is business cards. Mm-hmm. When you meet somebody for the first time and they give you a business card that, you know, is kind of curling up at the edges.
Or a Vistaprint one.
We mustn't mention any names.
We can mention that.
Right, so exactly. So, you know, again, it's all about, as you said, Hugh, it's all, give it some thought.
Yeah.
You know, and is it really worth skimping 20p, you know, on the cost per thousand on a business card, or should
no,
you just...
No, absolutely isn't.
And if I go, if I meet people at a networking event and they give me one of the really flimsy business cards, I actually don't really follow up too much with
exactly.
them. Because I think it represents them and their business.
And let's face it, you don't actually give out as many now as you used to years ago because of, you know, apps on LinkedIn and stuff. So the ones that you have, you get 1,000 and you pay whatever
you don't
pay,
trust
100
them at people.
Quid.
Yeah.
They'll last you years and years and years anyway.
Except for me.
You know, except for you, Ben, because you're everywhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's. I think that's important. I mean, I guess with the mug thing and the dirty mug thing, we've got, okay, there's 70 or 80 mugs there and there's only 50 people in a meeting, so if you pick up a dirty one off the table, put it to the back and get a clean one, I guess. But you know, so that's they're visible for hours, aren't they? So
Hugh, on the back of all of this, how do people get in touch with you? What's the best way to kind of to get in contact?
Well, you can either contact me on our phone number 01689 885 017, or you can contact me by email. You can do it at sales@re-bromley.co.uk, or you can visit our website.
So your Recognition Express Bromley is
Bromley,
that
it's
how
Bromley
you
and Dartford. It's Bromley and Dartford.
Bromley and Dartford.
Dartford, yeah.
Fine, okay. So clearly you want to talk to businesses in and around that catchment that have a requirement.
Yeah, anyone, you know, that's in the sort of Bromley, Dartford or Tunbridge, anything in a TM postcode, BRDA, is love to chat to them.
Brilliant.
Looking for people, as I said, who are looking to invest really in promotional products.
I think that's the key message, isn't it?
Cheers.
Don't just think of it as, you know, as Neil as someone that can supply you some brandy pens, because he'll ask you the why. What do you want them for?
Yeah. But yes, exactly. And I think people could do worse than to just call you, Hugh, and tell you what they do and what they're looking for in terms of end result. And you could give them advice, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, for now, Hugh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
What we're going to do, I think, Brian, is we're going to play a bit more music by way of an introduction to our next studio guest. And again, on the back of this, we will be inviting people to guess the link. So here we go.
You're listening to Kent Biz Connect. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.
Oh, I want your love, I need your love.
Well, it must be blast from the past week this week, Brian.
Retro week.
But before we get on to that and our next guest, I must just give a very quick shout out for the lovely people at Pecunia. So that's Tracy and Kevin, the credit management specialists. In fact, the UK's number one credit management and training consultancy.
Are they indeed?
Pecunia, based in our wonderful county of Kent. In fact, sharing an office with our next guest. So Tracy, thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you for your tweet, and we'll catch up with you soon. But Brian, yeah, over to you on the music.
Well, you say a blast in the past. That era is still the present for me, I have to say, and proud to say it. But that was The Shaman, I think, was that, and right. One of their lesser-known hits, Love, Sex, Intelligence, or LSI, as us kids from the streets used to refer to it as. But, yeah, Love, Sex, Intelligence. So
it's fair to say that we were struggling with the link here, weren't we?
Well, it just always comes up with Video Killed the Radio Star by Buggles, yes. Which is great as it is.
Yeah.
We've had it before, so we're trying to.
But when it comes to technology, we were bereft of suitable tunage to play. But Ben,
we stuck with the intelligence for you, Ben.
Welcome to the studio, Ben from BLIT Solutions.
Great.
Ben, I think the kind of the name says it all, but let's kind of backtrack a bit, because how long have you actually been in
what's your name, where are you from? Oh, wrong show.
In business now.
Well, I've been in business since 2012, so that's getting on to 7 years, nearly 8 years in May next year. So.
Incredible. So congratulations on that. We were at a networking meeting in
at
Maidstone.
At BBM Maidstone on Friday.
On Friday, and you did a fabulous 10-minute presentation. So in just in a sort of a snapshot of that, maybe in 2 minutes, take us through your journey from school through to successful entrepreneur, and bring us kind of up to date with all of that, but in a snapshot if you can, because it's a very interesting story.
It's a very interesting story, because I was born premature, as I said at the meeting, and my childhood was quite a tough time, and I had to go to a special school in Gillingham, where I had to go to a special unit, and then I had to go to another special school in Margate, because back then the councils were not as good as they are now. They didn't know how to deal with people like myself. And we had to be put into a special school down in Margate called Laneham. And we had to be all mixed together with other children with different disabilities. And it was quite a tough time, and I had to learn how to adapt and be away from home and sort of have socialise with other children. And when I left the school in the 90s, it was quite a difficult time to adapt to normal life outside the school.
So it's fair to say then that your early childhood was sort of characterised as being someone who wasn't normal, who didn't fit into the kind of the normal way of things, whether it be schooling or whatever. Is that fair to say? You weren't normal?
I don't say I wasn't normal, I just think I was different. I mean, the problem with what condition I've got, which is Asperger's, is we are not very good at communicating or socialising in different situations.
Mm-hmm.
And over the last couple of years, I've learned how to develop that by pushing myself harder than most people with my condition can do. Most people with my condition have got very high intelligence, but they've got no social skills, so they will be okay doing jobs like what don't involve meeting people or actually going out of an office. They might be stuck at an office desk all day or in a workshop or in a factory because they can't communicate with other people.
Mm-hmm.
So they get put into certain situations. But I didn't want to be the norm. I wanted to be the difference.
Right, okay. And that's quite key, isn't it? Because I think there's an awful lot of research now, medical research, that actually and the classic word is kind of disability. Instead of thinking of people with autism or Asperger's as individuals that have a disability that is going to hold them back,
yeah.
What we're actually starting to understand is that actually, you know, people like Ben are able to think in a different way.
It's more channeling that, isn't it? That I think that's what it is, because, you know, I've known Ben a long time, and it's some of the stuff that he does, his memory and his recall.
Right.
I mean, he's one you want on your quiz team, let me tell you.
Right.
For music and stuff like that, he'll tell you the year, the group, what number it got to in the charts and stuff like that. Yeah.
So when it comes to detail, I mean, you say yourself, Ben, when it comes to detail things, you're able to kind of to store all of that information.
Yeah.
And then kind of use it.
Yes, because we're very good at remembering things and visualising things.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like when I repaired your laptop. I remember
right.
where every single screw went back.
Yeah, well, that was a story. Position, so yeah. we sat in a pub after a networking meeting. I needed a new...
Pulling your laptop to bits.
I needed a new keyboard. Ben brought it along. He hadn't worked on my particular laptop before. But I think he took about 35 screws out of it, because he had to take the whole thing apart just to get the keyboard off.
Mm.
The hard drive had to come out, everything. But each one of those screws went back in exactly the same order that they came out.
Crumbs.
And there wasn't a single screw left on the table. Now, with someone like me...
No chance.
I've got a very short attention span. Mm. And if it had taken me longer than 10, maximum 15 minutes to do that job, do you know what? That whole thing would have ended up in the bin.
Yeah, me too.
And
yeah.
I'd have gone out and bought a new
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
So that's a great example, isn't it? So that is a strength and a skill that you've got that enables you to do your job day to day, I guess. Yeah. And that's, I think, what we're starting to kind of celebrate and understand a bit more, that actually the brain has evolved in different ways to help us solve problems.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a disability.
No.
Actually,
it's a huge asset. You can do something right there that you and I can't or won't.
It's part of the evolution of who we are as human beings. So that's fantastic. Yeah. So, Ben, just kind of just to finish on that side of things, because we want to talk about what you do as a business. But you're in the middle of writing a book at the moment as well, aren't you? Just tell us a little bit about that.
It's called, I've got the name of the book away, it's called Asperger's and Me, and basically it's a journey through my childhood right up to now and how I overcome each part of that journey. And it's also to give people who've got Asperger's, autism, and also people who haven't, just to see the eyes, through the eyes of someone who has got it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole deal of the book. So when someone reads it, they understand that how someone like me sees the world different to what they see.
Yeah.
So that's, and I think it's needed because there's a lot of employers that don't see what I see. So it's good for them to, but for them to read as well.
And you don't want people to be lonely either, do you? Because, you know, when you are different for whatever reason, sometimes I guess you can feel very alone in the world because you don't think people understand what you're going through, and that's important as well.
Because when I was employed, a lot of my employees never saw the gift they had having me employed.
Yes. Yeah,
they just saw that I was a bit of a distraction for their business.
Yes,
and that's the idea of the book, to give people that we're not a distraction. We're just slightly different, but we do have our strengths.
So, talking now about the business, you've been in business for 7 years as BLIT Solutions. You've recently moved into new premises with Tracy and the guys at Pecunia, which is brilliant. You've got an office space over in Maidstone. But what is it that you actually do day to day? What is BLIT Solutions?
We are a mobile computer engineering company. So basically, if someone gives a call, we come out to the person on the same day or the next day, whatever appointment they want to book with us.
Mm-hmm.
But we offer the personal service. Well, a lot of other IT companies do different. Like they sometimes have to bring to their shop or something, but we've got that personal service where we come to you.
Right.
But if we can't do it on site, we've got our workshop in Maidstone where it can be done.
Right.
Because
you might need to order a pass or whatever it is. But by and large, you are a call-out service to homes and businesses. Yeah. And wherever possible, you will remedy those problems on site in kind of real time. Which I guess for all of us kind of small business owners that turn our machine on in the mornings after an update that's happened that we were unaware of overnight. And this is the classic one, isn't it? And it doesn't work anymore. So all we've done is we've allowed the computer settings, the factory default, to download some new software that's come down the pipe. It's reinstalled or it's installed that software. Now my machine doesn't work. Incredibly frustrating. We need to get it fixed now. What's your kind of reaction time in a kind of typical scenario like that? I mean, how quickly can you sort of respond?
Well, it's normally a couple of hours.
Right, okay.
It all depends on how busy we are. We've actually just taken on another self-employed person, so actually the business is growing, so actually we've got two of us on the road now,
right.
So we've got a faster response time. And we're actually doing more stuff remotely as well with our new Office 365 platform and the Exchange platform.
Because that is incredibly powerful, isn't it? If you have got a problem, you know, being able to dial in to someone's machine remotely and actually, you know, roll back an update, uninstall a piece of rogue, you know, virus or whatever it might
sort
be.
Sort it without anybody actually going anywhere.
Yeah.
It's really good, isn't it?
So
we did that for another BBM member, Richard Dickey, last week. We actually managed to move him from IMAP to Exchange Mail within 4 hours remotely, where he was based in Altonbury and we were over in Maidstone.
Mm-hmm.
But we all done it through the internet without him having to come over to us or me go over to him.
Yeah.
So that's the beauty of remote support. It can be done through the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
In real time.
So. Yeah. But you're also quite forward thinking when it comes to kind of partnerships and collaboration, aren't you, with other businesses?
Yeah.
Because I know you work with a Mac specific expert, yeah, as well, don't you? So how does that work in terms of, you know, that kind of cross referral and working together on that basis?
It's because the way it works is that we've both got our own businesses, and it saves me time, because with Macs it's sort of like very time consuming, and because he's another BBM member as well, and the way we do it is that I pick the Mac up, I take it over to his office, he repairs it, and we do like a sort of markup price on it, so we help each other out, and he gives me all the referrals for all the Windows stuff he doesn't want to do.
Okay.
So it's quite a good business relationship. So we both have our own niches, but we actually refer work to each other.
So that's the key thing there, isn't it? Because, you know, he's very specialist in what he does. And we're talking about James Stockdale here, aren't we, at Fruit Geek?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So he's very good at, and he's a certified Mac expert.
Yeah.
Whereas you're much more Windows focused and day to day, I guess, as well. So
yeah, it's good collaboration.
Yeah. So
he's a great guy, and we work very well together.
Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant.
I mean, one of the things I've noticed, I don't know if it's just me or in general, but you used to get loads of kind of infections with viruses and malwares and stuff, so you'd have to clean it. Presumably you'd get calls to clean it off and restore it. Touch wood, that doesn't seem to happen as much these days. Am I speaking the truth there, or is it just because people's software, virus software, is better, or what is it?
Yeah, so with the latest version of Windows 1903, there is a lot more security in there, and there's a lot less risk. But if you've still got a weak antivirus and you use a free one, you're still opening yourself up to infection. And I always advise, if you open an email and the attachment doesn't look right, or doesn't look like the right address, or you get a phone call, that's the biggest thing at the moment is cybercrime, is the phone call.
Is it really?
Like people pretending to be like Microsoft or
broadband.
If you let that person on your machine, that is it.
Never do it, yeah.
Never do it. Never give you a remote access, because they can get all your details, like bank details, your personal, and clone your identity. So if you ever get a phone call from anyone pretending to be Microsoft, TalkTalk, BT, none of these companies will ring you.
No,
they expect you to ring them. So my advice is, do not just put the phone down, say you haven't got a computer, and then just hang up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good advice. Yeah, it's shocking, isn't it, the amount of times that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, so especially, it's mostly people over the age of 60. One of my customers got stung 2,500. But luckily, the bank phoned them up straight away and queried
them. The people wouldn't kind of restore their computer until they paid $2,500? Or?
No, the hacker
takes
it already, straight away.
Cool.
Now, the last time you had your hands on my equipment, Ben, my laptop, that is, Brian, you installed Windows 7 for me.
Yeah.
And unbelievably, so much time has passed.
It's going back a bit.
Well, I know, and I'm still using the same brick of a laptop that I had back then. In fact, it's 10 years old now, my laptop.
Yeah.
But what a quality machine that's been.
Must be.
But Windows 7 is coming to the end of its supported life, isn't it?
That's correct.
What does that actually mean in terms of support?
That means after January 2020, you will not receive any more updates from Microsoft.
Right.
Security plugins.
Right.
So you will need to talk to me very soon.
Okay.
Because I would advise everyone at the moment, that's what's keeping me more busy than anything at the moment, is upgrading Windows 7 machines.
Right. 10. But Windows 10, Ben, And I hear you talking about Windows 10 a lot, not so much recently, but certainly in the beginning, didn't have the best reputation, didn't it?
No, not in the beginning. No.
In terms of reliability and all the patches and everything else.
Sorted now, though.
Is it fair to say it's more stable now as an operating system?
Yeah, it's a lot more stable than it was. The new update is a lot more stable and it crashes a lot less. But it's still, if you've got an older computer, sometimes I found out recently that the 1903 update does fail on some older computers. It's sometimes due to the fact that the internet may drop off when the update's doing, or it might be that the computer's hard drive is not quite quick enough or not enough memory. There's quite a few factors. So any computer built after like 2014 onwards can probably take Windows 10 update without any problem.
Mm.
But the older machines, it can be a bit of a struggle. So you might need an upgrade in memory. We'd recommend an SSD for Windows 10. Any machine built 1903 update, we'd say put an SSD on it. That'd make a lot of difference in the performance.
Well, I was going to ask you about SSD because we're solid state drives. So what are we actually talking about there versus the kind of traditional old hard drive that a lot of people still have installed? What is a solid state drive?
Solid state drive is pure memory. So there's no moving parts. So you think about a USB stick and you double that up to about 4 or 5 USB sticks all soldered together, that sort of creates what a solid-state hard drive is. It's just memory on top of memory on top of memory.
Okay.
And it connects to the same fitting as a normal hard drive, but there's no moving parts like a motor or a laser or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quadruple the speed of a normal hard drive and quadruple the reliability. The problem with a mechanical hard drive, it wears out over time.
Mm.
It's got like a 10,000-hour lifespan. That might sound a lot, but over 5 or 6 years, that's not a lot of time.
Mm.
And with an SSD, they've got a longer lifespan and very faster doing data transfers.
And anyone that's ever lost a hard drive, like I have in the past, kind of kicks themselves in terms of, well, backup, crucially.
Yeah, that's another important thing. I'm now a Cronus backup provider, and that's a cloud-based system. People say when you use OneDrive, you're actually backing up the computer. You're not. OneDrive is a cloud-based hosting solution where you can transfer your documents from one PC to another, but it's not a backup solution.
No.
A backup solution is either an external hard drive or a professional program like Cronus or Carbonite, which actually does the backup off-site for you on a server. OneDrive is just a cloud-based sharing documents to one machine to another for another.
So, for businesses out there that aren't backing up automatically through an app that they have on their desktop or laptop that then goes into an off-site server somewhere, you know, through the cloud. What are we talking about for sort of backup on a kind of monthly basis? What's the kind of subscription for that?
Well, the Cronus, it's about 30p per gig, so it's not a horrendous amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
So you think 30 gigs, about £9 a month.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because it's so secure, someone like Cronus, someone like myself, can actually monitor the backups remotely and see when it's failing, when it's not failing. Because we've got the control panel in the office in Maidstone. So if we see someone's hard drive not backing up or failing, we'll know before the customer does.
Oh, right.
And then we'll be able to fix the problem and then connect to the machine remotely and fix the backup.
So you provide that as a monthly support for businesses?
Part of our monthly support package.
Oh, okay.
Which includes the Office 365 and Exchange platform.
Right. So what do those monthly support packages start at in terms of costing?
Well, as I said, the Cronus is like 30p per gig.
Right.
And Office 365 is about £9 a month.
Right, so okay.
It's not hugely expensive, but you're getting the peace of mind that everything is secure in the cloud and password protected.
So Office 365, does that include the suite of Microsoft Office products within that as well?
Yeah, so it includes Word, Excel, PowerPoint. That's the business premium, was £9 a month. So you get the Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Access.
So you've always got the latest version.
Yeah. And it updates itself.
And it's just not sitting on your desktop or laptop or device. It's a cloud-based.
The front end of the program is, but the rear end is in the cloud.
So right.
OneDrive and the sharing compatibility with the cloud.
Yeah.
So this has the front end, which is the front end, what's the program you load in.
Yes. Oh, okay.
But the back end, what updates itself all the time, gives you the latest version about Office, is in the cloud.
Right. Okay. And storage and backup is included within that,
if you bought the Cronus package.
Okay.
It's interesting the way things have changed. More things are moving into the cloud than they're not.
Yeah.
So the future is more cloud based.
Yeah.
Things like a computer would just be a dumb terminal in the end. You just use it for to access things, but you won't store much on it. It'll be stored in the cloud.
Ben, we have nearly come to the end of our show. hopefully your story has been inspiring for people listening out there that may know people, you know, who are in a similar position to you. But on a kind of business level, how do we get in touch with you when we have a problem with our computer?
Well, as you probably see, I'm everywhere. So I'm on Facebook under BOIT Solutions, under the same Twitter handle, BOIT Solutions. I've got my own website, which is www.bl-it-solutions.co.uk.
Okay.
And my telephone number is 01622 297262.
Brilliant.
So if you can, and we're also in Granville Road in Mayston.
Brilliant.
And he's also on the BBM website, the BBM, of course, website, where they can click on his little box and go straight through.
Of course,
as is Hugh, one under B, one under H.
Well done, guys. Look, that really is all we have time for. We will be back in 2 weeks' time with two fabulous new guests on the show. But for now, thank you so much, Hugh O'Neill and Ben Leach.
Thank you.
And we look forward to catching up soon. Thank you.
We certainly do. Thanks, guys.